Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Okta on Federal News Network.
Most other cybersecurity efforts will be ineffective without a solid identity and management setup in place. The challenge is to strengthen credentials and control over who can access what without making things intolerable for users. For the latest best practices, I spoke with Taka Ariga, Chief Data Scientist and Director of the Innovation Lab at the Government Accountability Office.
Tom, as you know, the Innovation Lab is sort of stood up as a practitioner of new computational capacity. So as we navigate through the complicated ecosystem of multi-cloud environment here at GAO, identity verification is definitely an issue that we have to tackle, because not only do we have new cloud environment, but we also have on-premise environment that we're still operating in. So in terms of best practices, you know, we'd learn from our colleagues, certainly across other federal government, but adhere to your garden variety of NIST 853, your NIST 863 around digital identity guidelines. There are certainly encryption standards under FIPS 140-2. And then we do sort of work through a number of technology stack to make sure that if we're operating in the cloud, that we're as cloud native as possible and not try to mix match old with the new, where we end up creating unintended consequences.
And let me ask you this. GAO, of course, the directors and their staffs oversee a wide range of federal programs, federal agencies, and each one has its own kind of column of oversight that they're responsible for. And so a lot of data comes in from the various agencies. Does GAO differentiate so that if, say, I'm looking at defense issues, can I also get to the data on health and human services issues or something? Or is that restricted? And how does ID and access management work in the context of the oversight work itself?
You're absolutely right. And GAO has a very unique pan-governmental purview. And so we do have to account for different types of data coming in, different classifications of data coming in, different levels of sensitivity. So you mentioned DOD. We certainly have a very specific enclave that we can process and ingest DOD CUI-related information. On even more sensitive data around maybe tax information or benefits information, those have specific arrangement with those agencies on how we can access and protect those information. And then there are sort of more typical within sort of FISMA moderate confines type of oversight activity that we're trying to establish a consistent security posture so that there's a sort of a single mechanism to access the different types of tools and data assets. So yeah, it does add to a layer of complexity in how we configure the security boundary. But this is part of doing business as an oversight entity, that we not only secure the information that are trusted to us, but access them in a way that enables us to do the kind of analysis. And so we do that collaboratively with the agency themselves to make sure that they understand our security postures as well.
Right. So in other words, if you, just to give an example, were to get a classified data set from whatever agency, then the people that access it at GAO would have to have the sufficient clearance also to be able to access it. And if someone else at GAO, even though they're a trusted GAO person, wanted to access it, but they didn't have the right clearance, then sorry, Charlie, you can't.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the sort of challenges that we have to navigate during the pandemic as well. How do our people access secure facility? How do they get into the agency? And how do we still maintain that classified network so that we can maintain that level of communication with agencies? So work continued even during the pandemic. And so that's just a slice of different type of security posture that we have to be mindful as, you know, GAO itself is going through a journey of modernization.
Right. And that includes cloud. So I want to talk about first the cloud issue, and then let's get to the at-home challenge, which is partly cloud related. But has cloud made it more secure, less secure, and how has it changed the detailed technical approach that you have to take? Again, ID and access management.
From my perspective, cloud can either make it more secure or less secure depending on the posture that we take. So for example, if we don't sort of utilize cloud native capability, but instead trying to do a shift or lift model of that cloud journey, we may end up creating pockets of differentiated access, differentiated security boundary that are very difficult to maintain consistently. So from the Innovation Lab perspective, we have really adopted sort of a cloud first, cloud native approach as we are configuring our tool stack, our infrastructure, but recognizing that we still need to communicate back to some of the on-premise data center. We are operating under a multi-cloud construct. So how do we communicate between one type of cloud infrastructure versus another type of cloud infrastructure, but do so in a way, in a consistent and replicable and scalable way, so that not every application then have its own unique configuration, not every prototype have its own unique configuration. So I think it starts with a very deliberate architecture and how we will approach different level sensitivity and use capabilities such as single sign-on, multi-factor authentication, and even site-to-site VPC, a VPN, and other sort of cloud-native technology to enable that seamless implementation of the security posture.
Because at first glance, when you think of single sign-on, yeah, great thing for users because then they don't get driven crazy every time they move from spot to spot on a network. But that seems to, at first glance, be in variance with the idea of zero trust, which is a continuous challenge. How does that balance?
Yeah, you know, GAO has been on a sort of multi-factor authentication posture for a while. And single sign-on is really our approach to make that user experience more seamless, but at the same time, not really sacrificing the kind of zero trust principle that we, you know, ourselves adhere to. So this is a matter of expanding the ecosystem and how user can apply to authenticate depending on the level of access they require. So as we are transitioning into this cloud journey, there are still pockets of more of a traditional authentication process that we need to apply. But as we go into sort of a newer cloud boundaries, we're starting to explore whether there are specific single sign-on capability that could be augmented to our existing posture, or that could be sort of rationalized in some way. So everything is subject to sort of user testing and security verification. We're not necessarily advocating one approach versus the other. What we're trying to do as part of the Innovation Lab sort of experimentation approach is to see what might work and how does that compliance posture align with various levels of sensitivity that we have to adhere to. And when it works, and we'll deploy it in a way that are sort of friendly to our day-to-day analysts to access them.
Taka Ariga, Chief Data Scientist and Director of the Innovation Lab at the Government Accountability Office. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
President Biden's executive order on cybersecurity is a solid step toward creating a resilient cyber infrastructure for our nation. Okta and AWS can help agencies meet the cybersecurity executive mandates with a zero-trust architecture that aligns to FedRAMP, NIST, and other standards. Together, Okta and AWS provide a vendor-neutral approach that enables MFA and identity management across endpoints, workflows, and supply chains. Learn more at okta.com/federal. That's okta.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Taka Ariga, Chief Data Scientist and Director of the Innovation Lab at the Government Accountability Office. Our topic is identity and access management in the cloud. And where does the control plane, if you, for lack of a better word, the applications that control ID and access management reside? Is that still an on-premises type of idea, or because so much is in the cloud, can that be where that control, again, I'm using the word plane, but the control mechanism, is that also cloud hosted?
Yeah, absolutely, man. As with many agencies that are going through their own cloud journey, we're starting to adopt a federated model because we're operating on a multi-cloud infrastructure where you may have multiple cloud service provider, but also the concept of different software as a service providers out there. They all need to sort of rely on a common set of identity and access management framework. And so this is where, you know, there's a component of Active Directory that are being federated, but there are other components of how we authenticate a GAO user through a federated model as opposed to maintaining an on-prem. We do still have, for disaster recovery purpose, certainly on-prem backup and things of those nature that we can sort of rely on should you know, need for some sort of failover.
And you mentioned earlier that it's not just necessarily a six-digit code that is that second factor. What are some of the other proofing technologies that you are considering or that you've looked at in the Innovation Lab? I mean, biometrics comes up a lot, but that's not all that easy to deploy in the real world.
Yeah, we're certainly looking at biometrics. As a matter of fact, GAO has recently published a report around the use of facial recognition. But as far as for our own agency use perspective, we're looking at other sort of commercial provider when it comes to authentication tools, whether those are Google Authenticator or some other third party. We've been talking with GSA's login.gov as well as Fiscal Service to learn what has worked well for them from authentication perspective. And it's always a tricky balance between maintaining a high level security posture versus the burden that we place on a user in a way that they, if it's too burdensome, they may think of a way to circumvent it. So it is a tricky balance. But yeah, we're looking at a variety of MFA technology beyond just sort of a token that generates a 6-digit code.
It's interesting that the login.gov effort is a long-standing, you know, I think that's the latest iteration of the general idea of trying to give people some kind of a login credential that is not name and password that they can use universally. This goes back almost to the dawn of when the internet became a ubiquitous thing for people. And we're not there yet, are we? I mean, I can't think of any instance where a password and then some sort of a proofing thing is still not the basic element there.
Yeah, I think GSA's login.gov has done a tremendous job in terms of adopting leading practices when it comes to authenticating users. As a matter of fact, we're having conversation with login.gov, not just, you know, to secure our internal system per se, but also how can identity verification be a mechanism to sort of mitigate the growth of improper payments. Right now, many of the federal benefits out there are still relying on just eligibility verification. But there's an element where if we can layer identity verification on top of that, might that also help to stem the tide of improper payments? But it's a tricky balance, right? I mean, we want to prevent improper payments, but we want to minimize any deterrence of proper payments. And there's certainly a segment of our society that don't have access to digital identity, that don't have access to latest technology, but they're equally entitled to these benefits. So how do we then take care of these last mile problem from a benefit administration purpose? So the concept of identity verification is not just inwardly for us on how do we secure our system, but how can it be applied in a scaled way that supports how the federal government and frankly, our state and local partner distributing these sort of trillions of dollars of pandemic relief money in a way that sort of not only address the need for speed, but can also incorporate identity verification as a pillar to potentially minimize improper payments.
Because that has to be tied to other fraud, anti-fraud measures. I mean, I'm thinking of a case recently, just a few days ago, the Justice Department led a team, interagency team, that took down a ring that had been fraudulently billing CMS to the tune of $1.4 billion, real money. And presumably these are people that had valid credentials and access, and therefore were able to send what looked like legitimate bills. So ID and access management is really part of that public-facing fraud and improper payment question, it seems.
You're absolutely right. So recently, GAO convened an expert panel across federal agencies, oversight community, industry providers and academics and whatnot, to really start talking about what are some of the best practices around identity verification. The goal for us is to distill a report hopefully in the beginning of 2022, to be able to articulate the kind of identity verification control that individual agency can consider. We're also in the process of developing a simulation model that goes along with those recommendations so that individual agency can, based on their facts and circumstances, adjust different criteria and see the different trade-offs that they can make. So that's an example of how we're looking to adopt identity verification as a mechanism to potentially mitigate improper payments while we're internally experimenting what is the right approach for GAO. To your earlier point, we have this pan-governmental access to a variety of data. So we do need a different mechanism to secure based on different sensitivity, but how do we do so in a way that's still with the user experience first and foremost, so that we're not overly burdening user and allow them the opportunity to think about how to circumvent them.
Taka Ariga, the Chief Data Scientist and Director of the Innovation Lab at the Government Accountability Office. We'll return with the third and final segment of this interview after a short break. I'm Tom Temin.
President Biden's executive order on cybersecurity is a solid step toward creating a resilient cyber infrastructure for our nation. Okta and AWS can help agencies meet the cybersecurity executive mandates with a Zero Trust architecture that aligns to FedRAMP, NIST, and other standards. Together, Okta and AWS provide a vendor-neutral approach that enables MFA and identity management across endpoints, workflows, and supply chains. Learn more at okta.com/federal. That's okta.com/federal.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Taka Ariga, Chief Data Scientist and Director of the Innovation Lab at the Government Accountability Office. We've been discussing ID and access management in the cloud. And getting back to the issue of that second factor and overlaid that with the geo-positioning question and the geo-fencing question, that brings in the idea of third-party proofing services, which they may ask you, did you live at XYZ on Main Street back in 1967 or that kind of thing? Right. And is that growing as a mainstream type of way for agencies to do proofing?
Yeah, we certainly see implementation of that type of service. I think, you know, for example, Fiscal Service and both Login.gov rely on a set of data provider to help them do that type of proofing. For geo specifically, it's not clear to us that's necessarily the appropriate way for us to go about doing it, given the diversity of the security posture that we have to keep. And frankly, it's not necessarily, from a PI perspective, appropriate for us to be asking employees about, you know, what was your last year's adjusted gross income, for example, for the purpose of accessing, let's say, DoD data. So it is something that we're exploring, but at this point, we don't have a sort of plan to at least scaled use of third-party identity as a service capabilities.
Okay, let's talk about Active Directory. We talked about that a little while ago. Is that still the basic element for agencies defined, and is it for GAO, as who's who and what they can access? Because that's been twisted and turned into a cloud thing, an on-premise thing over the years, but it really seems to endure because it basically does what it's supposed to do.
Right. I think Active Directory still has a place. I view Active Directory almost like a business card. It tells you who you are, but doesn't necessarily verify that that's in fact who you are. So we do, in conjunction with Active Directory, a number of other technology stack to verify the user identity, so that when we say, you know, Bob or Susie is trying to access this system, beyond just their business card attributes of who they are, what team they align with, we can actually use additional mechanisms to verify that they are in fact who they are.
People have suggested that the state-of-the-art ID and access management system can be extended to onboarding people, and that's traditionally required that in-person type of enrollment, if you will. For the CAC card is the classic example. At some point, you got to see somebody in person to get the picture. But now with everybody remote and the idea of onboarding people that may not ever set foot in the agency or still haven't, that idea might be setting up as almost a permanent way to be able to onboard people. What's your thinking on that one?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about this during the expert panel as well, you know, for the most vulnerable parts of our society, folks that are underbanked, folks that don't have access to a smartphone, digital credentialing is probably out of the realm of a possibility. So how do we leverage existing maybe social services or even a postal office or DMV to support that type of in-person identity verification for the purpose of benefits administration? But within GAO, you're absolutely right. You know, we having to essentially overnight shift all of our onboarding training to virtual, where it used to be conducted in person. Same thing with our security office when it comes to badging, even the parking office, you know, their work has been done in person. And so a lot of this is really necessitating us to not only sort of accommodate this virtual environment, but I think it's an opportunity for us to reimagine what this sort of post-pandemic hybrid world needs to look like. So if you think about it, you know, for the purpose of badge accessing, you can easily take a sort of a picture in sort of Zoom environment. And as a matter of fact, we might even be able to do some of that image processing better in a cloud environment as opposed to an in-person environment. So that's something that we're exploring as well to say, you know, not just trying to accommodate this sort of a near-term pandemic posture, but in a post-pandemic world, how do we reimagine how GAO could work? And One example of that we're looking into is how, you know, augmented reality might support GAO site visits, right? I mean, pandemic or no pandemic, I don't think in the near future we will be comfortable sending a team of 20 people to any given environment, whether it's inventory counting or some other audit work. But we might be comfortable sending one person plus an augmented reality goggle where that experience can still be replicated. Now, we're talking about augmented reality in of itself has its own security identity issue attached to it. So that then pushes some of our identity posture, not only in the infrastructural sense, but also to the edge computing devices as we're starting to deploy them.
And I wanted to ask, too, that you are the chief data scientist at GAO, in addition to being the director of the Innovation Lab. Mm-hmm. What's the data scientist, data officer angle on all of this ID and access management?
Yeah, and I think I talked about this in other forms as well. You know, identity verification is not just about humans. From a data science perspective, we are certainly developing a lot of models and algorithms. And a lot of times those models and algorithms require some sort of credential so that they can log into databases to retrieve data, so that they can sort of push some output into another cloud service as an example. So this is where we also need to be mindful of the kind of credential and proofing that we do to the algorithm so that, you know, in some instances, should there be an adversarial attack, that we have some level of assurance treating algorithm not as some just automatons, but, you know, something as equally fallible from a human perspective. So that's something that we're quite mindful of. All of our data scientists have at least a level of cybersecurity hygiene as they're developing their own capabilities to support various missions. So, I mean, from a data science perspective, I usually advocate not lose sight of identity verification as a human problem, but it could be an algorithmic issue as well.
And while we have you, what are some of the other exciting things going on in the Innovation Lab, which you actually haven't set foot in, but it's under construction, and hopefully everyone will get themselves inside the building at some point?
Yeah, you know, the Innovation Lab was set up to be the practitioners of emerging capabilities, whether those are AI, blockchains, cloud services, you name it. So over the past 18 months or so, we certainly have developed a lot of prototypes when it comes to use of natural language processing. We're in the middle of deploying a blockchain prototype to really try to understand what are some of the reporting benefits of a distributed ledger? What are some of the impacts to the audit methodology as far as GAO is concerned? Back at the end of June, we published the first of its kind artificial intelligence accountability framework. So this is addressing the duality that GAO lives in. Not only do we want to be practitioners of these capabilities, we also need to figure out how might we conduct the oversight function related to these capabilities. Likely we'll start addressing some of the cloud-related cybersecurity best practices. We probably will start addressing sort of blockchain-related sort of practices. And you know, as I was mentioning, we're working through a collaborative framework to really try to study how identity verification could be a part of the solution when it comes to improper payments. So never a dull day, virtual or otherwise, but very much looking forward to the continued cadence of the Innovation Lab in pushing out some of these new capabilities and prototypes.
Taka Ariga, Chief Data Scientist and Director of the Innovation Lab at the Government Accountability Office. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Okta on Federal News Network.
President Biden's executive order on cybersecurity is a solid step toward creating a resilient cyber infrastructure for our nation. Okta and AWS can help agencies meet the cybersecurity executive mandates with a zero trust architecture that aligns to FedRAMP, NIST, and other standards. Together, Okta and AWS provide a vendor-neutral approach that enables MFA and identity management across endpoints, workflows, and supply chains. Learn more at okta.com/federal. That's okta.com/federal.